Hi there, and welcome to the Women on Amazon podcast. My name is Regina Peterbergsky, and I am your host. As an Amazon FBA seller and coach, I'm in the trenches daily supporting my family by building Amazon brands. Here, you'll be hearing the journeys of some amazing women who have changed their lives through Amazon and e-commerce, as well as strategies and tips on how you too can create a better future for yourself and your loved ones. Hi, and welcome back to episode 55 of the Women on Amazon podcast. And I'm absolutely thrilled to have Ashley Armstrong join me for this episode. I have to say our conversation was about an hour long, and we covered all sorts of topics, including but not limited to, you know, her personal entrepreneurial journey. We talked a lot about Amazon. We talked about mindset. We talked about images and infographics. We talked about customer journeys. And in the last 10 minutes, we talked about her current exciting project of crypto. So you are going to want to listen to this episode more than once, I guarantee it. And I highly recommend you take notes, because there's so many knowledge bombs dropped in our conversation. I think you will be amazed. So please enjoy the conversation. As always, show notes with links and information are on the website, which is womenonamazon.com/55 for this episode. And just one little quick note, towards the end of our conversation, Ashley and I touch on a training program on crypto. And I do have to make a disclosure that I am actually a participant of that training. And I have included in the show notes a link to my personal review and experience of that program. So if you're interested in that, please do take a look. As I said, that is only the last 10 minutes of this episode. And I'm sure you're going to get plenty of value throughout our entire conversation. I'm so excited to be sharing it with you today. And welcome to the delightful and gorgeous Ashley Armstrong. How are you, Ashley?
I am super awesome now that I'm here with you.
And welcome, welcome, welcome to the Women on Amazon podcast. So you've got such a fascinating story and history. So I'm going to try and touch on as many of the things that you're an expert at as we possibly can. So let's go back to the beginning of your e-com journey and a little bit even before that. What were you doing? What's your business background? Let's start there. Who are you? Where do you come from?
Gosh, are you sure you want to go down that path? Oh my
gosh. Sure, let's go.
Well, in a nutshell, let's cliff note this thing, shall we? At the end of the day, who am I? Well, I'm Ashley Armstrong, the e-com hidden rules expert. And my journey started as really a pro athlete. I come from a pro athletic family with Olympic background. And so sports and working hard and getting the gold.
What were your sports?
Downhill ski racing.
Okay. Of course, you're Canadian.
Yeah, I'm Canadian. Exactly. You know, two pieces of stick sitting on our feet and seeing how fast we can throw ourselves down the damn hill without dying. So that was definitely the background. I was skiing since I was 8 months of age. Technically, they put me on a hill and they pushed me and see how far I go before I fell over. And, you know, from that point on, just the go-getter, you know, be the best, work hard, you know, push through the pain, you know, that kind of mentality. It was thrown right at me from a very early age, obviously. Wow. And from that point on, you know, I was competing nationally. And then I moved into the pro athletic space of teaching all four disciplines within the snow sport industry, running ski schools, running races that you'd see on TV, setting up race courses, all this other fun stuff. So I was always in snow, freezing my butt off, to be quite honest with you. And, you know, long story short, I end up meeting my now husband and he's like, I'm going to Mexico. And I'm like, okay, I've never been there before. So let's go. 14 years later and two children, we finally came back to Canada. But while we were in Mexico, when you're living
in a lot of skiing in Mexico, right?
Not a lot of skiing. I completely gave it up. I traded the snow for the sand. And It was a complete whirlwind. It was an amazing journey being down there. And when you are living in another country, like there's really not much to do when it comes to jobs per se, because I was always managing something or teaching something in some sort of capacity. And you know, I've always had that entrepreneurial spirit. I was making clay ashtrays on the beach when I was a kid, selling them for 25 cents. Like it's just been in the blood. And I had a few businesses I was running out of the house. I was a naturopath and a childbirth educator and all this other fun stuff. But how the e-com part started was I was growing my own bacteria in my kitchen, making probiotic drinks. And this is way before, you know, Whole Foods even knew what the hell a probiotic drink was. Mm-hmm. This is also before anyone was talking about, you know, your gut and being second brain. Yeah. Like this was not really on anyone's radar. And being in a country where it's literally just full of tourists who are coming down, having fun, partying, drinking a whole bunch. Needless to say, my drink went like gangbusters. So not only the locals loved it, but the tourists absolutely loved it as well, because they can get right back out to that beach the very next day feeling, you know, top-notch.
You're basically selling a hangover cure. Is that what you're telling me?
It's just basically that. You're not allowed to say cure, but yeah, let's just go with that for sure. Okay. And I had to figure out how, you know, the tourists would leave. They're like, how the hell do I get this drink? This is awesome. Because it's great for so many different ailments and diseases and problems, not just that one particular aspect. And that really got me into researching, like, how can I manufacture this? And simultaneously of spending a year trying to figure out how to manufacture it, which is like, everyone's like, it's under 50 grand and, you know, 50,000 units. And I'm like, I don't have that. So there's got to be a better or easier way to do this.
Because you were just making it in your kitchen. Is that right?
I was just making it in my kitchen. Yep, exactly.
So how many units a week could you manufacture?
Not enough. Let's put it that way. Definitely not enough. We would do, you know, like 50 to 100. Like it was just, well, more than that for the week, but it was a slow climb. I was always sold out. I had waiting lists all the time. Whoever got on there first got it, you know, and it was fun. And that
limited production is limited income, right?
Exactly. And that's why I needed to figure out how to, like, this is a proven thing. It works. People freaking love it. So how the hell do I take this to the masses? So that's where the manufacturing part came in. But I was also simultaneously also writing and publishing my children's books and working with people from all over the world.
Of course, you do.
As I do. I used Amazon to publish them. And then I end up getting bestsellers. And I'm like, holy jumbly, this is freaking amazing. Like Amazon is an awesome place, the marketplace.
Okay, so just circle back. When was this that you were doing your
book? Well, this was 10 years ago when I was doing all of this. So
2011.
Actually, 2010, 2011. Yep.
So this is sort of before the early days of FBA, really. They were just starting. So the whole FBA business model wasn't quite known, or if it was only known by a very, very small number of people, right? And Amazon was still focusing on buying product for themselves rather than allowing third parties as well. Yep.
Yeah. So I was very blessed that I got in on the early stages just by sheer dumb luck of, you know, wanting to publish children's books, you know, for my kids, for, you know, life lessons in case I died early one day. That's the whole reason why I did that. So like how to be an entrepreneur and how to meditate and vision boards and all that other fun stuff. So those are there in their kids' the keepsake boxes, but you know, a lot of other people seem to love them as well. So I'm like, okay, this is awesome. And then I was like, okay, there's got to be a better way to do this. And, you know, looking for online programs and trainings and hiring the best mentors I could possibly hire. Mm-hmm. I built a 7-figure physical product business, specifically using Amazon and Shopify as well, but Amazon. And it was a whirlwind. It was absolutely amazing going through that process.
So was that with your probiotic drinks or was that with...
I did not do it. No, I learned very quickly that small, lightweight, and less liability is the way to go. So, you know,
probiotics, it's a living thing, right? So you can't actually send it to an Amazon warehouse where God knows, you know, what temperature it's going to be at. It will kill the bacteria. So yeah, absolutely.
Exactly. Absolutely. I was also looking into shelf-stable versions. Like really the whole game plan was building out shelf-stable versions that were in tiny little packets, like, you know, like the Crystal Light that you get to flavor your drinks, like that kind of thing. So you can take it anywhere. You can take it traveling and whatnot. And it was called the Yummy Tummy Probiotic Drink. And it was like, no baño. It was like, because obviously I was in Mexico. It was like, you know, you're not going to have diarrhea or this or that. Yeah. Or you're going to like protect yourself as you're traveling. And I couldn't trademark it because it was already used. Like I had all these different things that kind of came around with just learning that process. But yeah, it was a lot of fun to kind of get me there, and I learned a lot of lessons. And then of course,
so did you do a training program, or did you just figure it out? Because back then, as an ASM would have been, they had a precursor to ASM back then.
Yeah, I was lucky enough to get in the beginning of ASM.
Gotcha.
So yeah, mm-hmm. So it was all like, you know, you think about the time period it takes just to do research, try to figure things out. Like that's a whole year gone. And then publishing books, writing, I wrote 6 of them. So like, you know, writing those things up, getting them edited and hiring, you know, writers and editors and, you know, the whole process. So what you don't see behind the scenes was a couple of years, of course, but I did get into ASM. I was one of the first ones kicking that can, and it was awesome.
Yeah.
Obviously it really showed me the who, the what, the where, the how, the why, and the when of getting the job done. And I just followed the script and, you know, just basically did the whole, well, if they can do it, I can do it too. Again, that's the whole mindset that, you know, came from the childhood experiences and whatnot.
Personal story. I saw ASM 1 and did not get it. I didn't get in until ASM 5. I saw 1 and 3 and I wasn't ready mentally, or I didn't know what I was looking at. I guess I wasn't in the right space. So kudos to you.
Yeah, when you know. Jumping. You know what I mean? Like it's just, I was already making products, you know, and I was already selling them. And like the drink was only one of them. The other version I have a million bloody products that I was always making out of my house.
Yeah.
The other one was I had 21 ingredient superfood packs. Yeah. So it literally had everything from like goji berries to chia seeds, like the whole 9 yards. And I bought them all. Everything was, of course, organic, raw whole foods as much as possible. And I put it all into one like little bag, and I had the sticker, and like, I was again selling them around town as well, just like my drinks. And again, everyone loved it because you just had to pour it on top of a cereal or a yogurt or whatever. And Bob's your uncle. Like you're getting tons of nutrients from all these different things that you cannot even buy in Mexico, to say one thing.
Yeah,
gotcha. You couldn't get anything down there or whatever. So like, you know, I had a lot of these products that I was making out of my home. And it just, you know, I just, how do I make this bigger? Like it, buying groceries for the week is great, but that's not enough to survive on.
Yeah.
And that, you know, that's when I went seeking out for extra training. Yeah. And so the ASM worked, but then I also got mentors. Like, you know, with my background, you know, my upbringing, I had all Olympic athletes basically. Yes.
So
like
you understood about coaches and having the right coach.
Yeah. You got to have coaches. You got to have someone for every aspect of what you're trying to accomplish in life. Usually one coach is not enough. Like if you look at a pro athlete, they have someone who's a nutritionist, they have a stretching coach, they have a weight coach. They, you know what I mean? Like they have a coach for every single thing because they're all very meticulous. They all need their own expertise. Mm-hmm. And, you know, luckily for me, I understood that. And I also was not afraid to invest in myself. And I wasn't afraid to just throw money out there. I didn't have that fear of like, oh my gosh, I'm putting the money out there. And like, what if I never get it back again? And I'm just like, I don't give a crap if I get it back again, because I'm going to work my ass off.
Well, yes, because when you invest in yourself rather than stuff, you know, it's going to come back, I don't know how many fold, but multiple folds. And I totally agree with you on that. Always invest in
every
myself.
Every failure is a great lesson as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh. So
fail fast. That's just
the Yeah. Fail fast, fail forward. You know, my like slogan that I sort of coined or whatever is flexing your failure muscle. And how often are you doing that? The more you flex your failure muscle, the easier it gets. Just like when you go to the gym and you lift weights, you know, it's hard in the beginning. And then, you know, after a while it gets easier, and it's just the same thing. Like as soon as you come up against a molehill or a problem, you start learning how to like freak out, because that's what we need to do as a human being, get rid of the energy. And then now it's actionable step, like just push past it and through it. And the more you do that, the easier it becomes to be able to problem solve and to be able to do that. So flexing your failure muscle is my little term that I coined there. And I love it. It's really an Armstrong thing, you know, bringing back to like my dad and, you know, all that other fun stuff. So I love it.
So you built up your brand. So we're still sort of what, mid-2010s?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah. So I did that for years. And then I ended up moving over into working with Dan Hollings. I partnered with Dan Hollings and with all his students and training and teaching and coaching and mentoring and software tools, you name
so
it.
So I that remember you were involved with, I'm just trying to remember what it was called, the bundling software. I think I was one of the first people that jumped on board of that back in the day. I remember.
Awesome. Yeah. My version was the virtual bundler. And then the version with Dan and everyone else was the Amazo Amplifier.
That's right.
So that was a lot of fun. And that damn thing, like it like it provided results like nobody's business. It was amazing if you actually set it up.
Yep.
Which, you know, maybe not a lot of people did set up, but the ones who did, we were able to find over $500,000 of free found money for sellers just by setting up that one strategy. It was a lot of fun during that process. So like, you know, it was just you one thing after the other. And like, people are like, well, what do you define as success? And I'm like, well, I don't really define too much things as to success, because every time I accomplish something, my, you know, my ceiling goes, like the next level kind of opens up. I start seeing what other people are doing, because now I'm at that level and I can see around me. I'm like, ooh, I want to be like you, or I want to be able to do that now. And everything that I end up accomplishing, it just opens up the opportunities of more things that I never would have even thought about doing or accomplishing beforehand. But really at the end of the day, success is being able to put my head down on my pillow, feeling good, feeling healthy. I have great children, a roof over my head, food in my belly. And, you know, I took action that day, either resting or business or personal or life or relationship. And if I can put my head down and feeling good about any or all of the above, then that's a success in my personal viewpoint.
Beautiful.
Because it always moves.
Love that. So let's talk about something that's dear to both our hearts and minds, and that is attitude and getting your head right. And this is something that I talk to from time to time with my guests, because as an entrepreneur, you know, we don't go, there's no real schools for entrepreneurs for the mindset shift that needs to occur. You know, we get ourselves up, but, you know, some of us at 5:30 in the morning, every morning, to do what we need to do. In my case, often in pajamas.
Nevertheless, right,
you know, it's talk to me about mindset and what kind of mindset and what people can do to create an entrepreneurial mindset.
You know, I absolutely love that. And I was very blessed that I was brought in with another company about a year and a half ago or whatnot, where I was actually qualifying their leads for a program that they were selling. And it's all about starting a business or whatnot. Mm-hmm. So it was in my wheelhouse, but a little out of my wheelhouse, which is also very fun. And during that process, I very quickly became aware of a very large majority of the population do not have what it takes to be an entrepreneur. And I say that with a grain of salt and no disrespect to anybody.
Yeah. It's not for everybody.
If you're not, yeah, it's absolutely not for everybody. But we are a special breed, and we are a very small community, if you look at in the whole grand scheme of things.
So in these conversations you had, so what were the points or the triggers that you thought, yeah, this person is an entrepreneur or that person is not an entrepreneur? Were there particular, what are the qualities that you found that distinguished us crazy people?
Well, I know, right? I love being crazy. So label me all you want. I'm good for that. The biggest things that I noticed, which, you know, again, like when you look at our upbringing, whether it's good, bad, or ugly, you can kind of, if you look back and follow the dots that kind of get you to where you are right now, we have reasons why we do things. But a lot of the people who see the shiny objects, they see the big money, the private jets, and, like, you know, the big flashy things.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
You know, they're being indoctrinated with that and expecting that to happen. It's like the whole iceberg effect, you know, like most of the iceberg is actually under the water. You're only seeing like 10% of it above the surface kind of scenario. And I think everyone's seen that visual around, so that's pretty easy. But a lot of it really had to do with their upbringing. If they didn't have an entrepreneur in the family, their family didn't try to go above and beyond wherever their station is at or wherever they were in life. You know, a lot of negative connotations around investment, a lot of negative connotation around what you do with your money. And there was this one woman who I was speaking to, and it blindsided me, but at the same time, it made perfect sense. And I'm like, oh, now I'm starting to understand, where she really wanted to have a business because she wasn't making enough money. And so we had to dive into, like, well, if you're going to be starting a business, you have to have three components. You need time, energy, and capital investment, no matter how you shake it. And most people don't have the capital investment sitting underneath their bed in order to invest into something, whether it's a business or an investment portfolio or whatever it is. You got to find it. And that's the biggest thing about entrepreneurs, is we find what we need to do. We problem solve our way through things, no matter what. And she was really adamant, and she actually got very emotional, where I was having this deep-rooted conversation with her, and I was like pulling the curtain back of what it actually takes to operate a business. And there's so many different business models, and you have to do your due diligence of diving into how that business model runs. Do you like it? Does it work with your personality? Can you wait the length amount of time that it means to put money in and then to hopefully get a return on that investment? Yeah. Again, every business model is different. And so I'd always use the hot dog cart scenario to kind of like try to like hit home with individuals, because it's not exactly the flashiest business ever. But there's a lot of people who do it. A lot of people love it. And it actually does pay bills for people. So if you wanted to start a hot dog cart, you would literally have to have a $10,000 investment for something like that. And that would blow people's minds. They're like, no. I'm like, yes.
Of course.
You know, about $5,000 for the cart, give or take, you or new or used, whatever that might look. Depending on where you live, you can have a permit for about $5,000. I'm in Vancouver, so the permits are higher than that. Mm-hmm. Then, you have the hot dogs and the condiments and da-da-da. Then you have to get up at the crack of dawn or stay up super late at night. You have to be outside in the cold or the rain on the weekends. Like, how many hot dogs do you need to sell in order to get a profit? You know, and you need to know all these things. And when I break it down to something basic like that, it would blow their mind. They're like, oh, I never thought of it that way. I had no idea that much money was needed to have such a simplistic looking type of business.
Talk to me about, I was in bricks and mortar retail, and, you know, to fit out a retail store is $250,000 just to open the doors.
Yeah.
And you don't get that back in a hurry.
Exactly.
So a $10,000 hot dog cart sounds like a dream to me.
Right? It does. Until you
and I have to say that's why the Amazon business that's why the Amazon was so attractive to me. I started my Amazon business on probably $10,000 originally. Compared to my $250,000 shop fit out. It was just nuts. And that doesn't include inventory for the store. So no, I hear you. It's
it was really amazing. And so after having this conversation of explaining what happens behind the scenes that you need to be aware of when you are looking to figure out what business model works for you, she was so emotional. And then she just blurted out, just screaming at me, there's no way I'm going to put any money into anything because I'm taking food out of my children's mouth.
Right. And that was a deep-seated thing in her. Yep. Historically, she obviously heard her parents say that, right?
Yeah. And that was not the only individual. I heard that in some sort of way, shape, or form over and over and over and over again. The individuals who see other people who are working blood, sweat, and tears to accomplish something, falling on their faces, getting back up, they don't see any of those trials and tribulations, or they might kind of think about it, but they don't really let it soak into them. And all they cared about was just right now, today, how can I feed myself? And if I take money out, it's not coming back. Like there's a door that closes for them as soon as they let money leave their hand.
It's survival mode. You know, is it like Tony Robbins and like that group they talk about, you know, the pyramid, you know, and when you're in survival mode, you can't be in growth mode. So you've got to take care of your survival mode first. And if you're worried about, you know, paying rent and feeding the kids, then maybe an entrepreneur lifestyle is not the right one for you at this time, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But then, you know, when you take that where someone who's trying to get into a business and trying to figure out which one works best for them, and then you flip that over into people who already are in business, you can see that the individuals who already are in business, and I praise them so much because it takes some serious guts. It takes guts. You will have friends and family going like, no, you can't. That's stupid. Like all this crap that will just like, you know, crabs in a bucket kind of scenario. And they do it anyways. So I'm like, all the freaking power to you, man. Whether it's good, bad, or ugly, works, doesn't work, doesn't matter. You did it. And that's awesome. You know, that gets put into the chapter of your life story or your book of life or whatever. But at the same time, even though they would take a chance to go down that pathway, we all have serious anchors. And you literally just said it, what you heard in your childhood, what your parents were doing, what your upbringing was, how much education outside of the normal indoctrination of like school, college, or whatever, what extra education are you getting into mentorship and putting yourself in a position where you're not the smartest person in the room. And at the same time, of like, and this is where I like to correlate business individuals or entrepreneurs, I should say, with athletes, you know, where an athlete will fall on their face, they'll win a gold, they'll lose the next game. They got to go train, whether it's sunny or rainy or whatever, doesn't matter, but they get back up and they go and they do it again. And that's the same thing you have to do with business. You don't win every bloody game. You don't win every product launch. You don't hit every single quarterly goal sometimes. It is what it is. But if you have the determination to keep going back out there and doing it again, you're good to go. Because eventually, sometimes what we think is going to happen, we end up winning, but in a different way. It looks completely different than what we first anticipated or were expecting or whatever. And so there's like a little bit of that disconnect when people are in business. They took that first leap and they're falling. You know, they might have hit the water or whatever, but now they're treading water. They're just trying to stay alive. Like, they have all these things happening all around you, all the turbulent water, like, you know, water that's not even moving at all. And you're just trying to keep yourself afloat. And when you're solo and by yourself, you have no one to yell out to. You have no one to talk to. You have no one to help you. It's not like an office where we have a water cooler where you can say, hey, what do you think about this? Or I need an idea about this. You have no one to bounce that off of.
That's, and with networks, the entrepreneurial aspect, so important, right?
Networks. Yeah. And it's just like, when you put yourself, if you take that leap of faith and you jump off the cliff and you go into the entrepreneurial space and you're treading water, got to start treading water. Like, now you got to get into synchronized swimming, man. Yeah. You got to go start finding your partners. You know what I mean? Like, go find those people, go hang out with those people, make your own like little community, your own little sounding board, pay to be next to a mentor. If you see someone kicking ass and taking names, you're like, yeah, I want to learn from them. I like them. I like the Rolodex. I like the people they hang out with, their vibrational tendencies. You pay to get next to those people. Oh, no matter what.
Because absolutely. It's just going to pop up with you. Such a big proponent of that. So yeah, love it.
Yeah.
I think I've spent more money on masterminds and mentorships and goodness knows what over the last 30 years than pretty much anything else, in all honesty.
Absolutely. And I love it. Like, if I actually tally it up, like, I'm going and, like, you know, we're into the 200 grand, 300 grand.
I'm too scared to add it up.
Exactly. But at the same time, like, just, even though I might forget half the crap that I've learned, because I do, like, I was a naturopath. I don't remember any of that crap. I really don't. Like, I'll remember a few things and this and that, but all like the scientific. Yeah,
but it's part of your muscle memory, your DNA. It becomes a part of you. I mean, there's some verbiage that I use today that was part of a community and a training that I was involved with 30 years ago. And the only people who understand me when I talk that way are people who are in that same sort of learning environment. And I sometimes have to catch myself and go, oh, hang on a second. This person I'm talking to doesn't understand what I just said.
You got to be in the know, all right?
You got to be in the know. In that particular, you know, it was a particular time and a space where we were all talking in a particular way because we were all heading in a direction. It was super cool. But it still applies. 30 years later, I still apply principles that I learned back then. And so tell me what you've been up to for the last 18 months. Tell me about the hidden rules and what you've been doing.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. Really the last year and a half, I've rebranded. I'm, you know, the Hidden Rules Expert, as I mentioned before, and I've done a ton of media and TV, and I'm actually a regular guest expert on an Emmy award-winning TV show in the United States that's shown across all major networks. And it's just been a lot of fun, really, one, getting myself out there. And two, if you asked me like 10 years ago if I was going to be on TV, no way. If you asked me 15 years ago if I actually have a published book, let alone best-selling published books, no freaking way. You know, the level just kind of keeps going up, which is really, really amazing. But this past year has really opened my eyes into, what do I love to do? Where's my zone of genius? How do I really help companies? And, you know, because I've been consulting multi-million-dollar companies for years, but, you know, I'm managing like 10 or 15 people and training them and, like, you know, kind of moving all the pieces and parts around. And, oh my gosh, it's, you know, it's tons of work. And I loved it at the time that I was doing it, but, you know, I'm 39. I'm getting older. I'm getting wiser.
Stop it.
Love my birthday. It's like, I'm only getting started right now, is how I feel, which I love. But, you know, I'm sitting here going, you know what? Where do I like really light up? And I really light up going into like the science behind buyer behavior and, you know, positioning listings in order to get the highest sales conversion rates. That's where I love, because it takes the visual component and you just really dive into optimizing customers' decisions is really okay, what
so
it
I'm
is. And
so stop you there.
Yeah.
Because I love what you just said. Let's bring that back to an Amazon listing.
And yes.
Break it down for me exactly what you just said as it relates to positioning your Amazon listing.
Yeah, well, everything I'm saying, for the most part, also correlates to your e-commerce platforms as well as your own website. So, you know, take with a grain of salt. You can kind of move and move parts back and forth, and you definitely should, because you need to have consistency across all platforms. But what I do with my clients is, a lot of times they will come to me after they're bleeding. And what I mean by bleeding is that they've been spending a crap ton of money on ads.
Yep. Which is getting easier and easier to do. You know, Amazon loves taking our ad money, right?
Yeah. And then they finally realize that, you know what, the ads might actually be working, but the listing is not working. And so, you know, when they come to me, they're in the state of like, holy crap, Ola, what are we doing? Like, you know, we got to stop the bleeding. And really what it is just, you know, I have a technically an 8-step process that really gets down to three components of a process of helping someone, you know, optimize their customers' decisions to monetize their Amazon listings, or optimizing a listing for those who are very familiar with that verbiage for the Amazon space. And it's really just diving into the nitty gritty of understanding how humans' brains work and how we have to show up online. And so there's two different components when it comes to optimizing a listing. You have the robots, which everyone understands that, keywords and, you know, all that other fun stuff. And then we have the customer, the consumer. And so what I like to challenge people to do more than anything is, I don't know about you, but Amazon takes like most of my paycheck. I'm always shopping. You know, we have to stop being business owners sometimes, because you can't see the picture when you're inside the frame. And, you know, really, I'm just that outside component. I'm the sounding board. I'm the visionary strategist that asks the hard questions and that points out the things that are right underneath your nose, but you're too close to it to see in most cases. And so what we really end up doing through the 3-step process is going back to basics, which is not everyone's favorite thing to do. So it's research. It's really diving down into research. And my system creates an SOP, standard operating procedure. So all the information that we're collecting to do, the competitor analysis reports, the customer journey as well, and it all documents it onto one sheet. And by the time you're done with it, the very last page actually spits out the most important key components that you need to be putting into your listing in some case. And so really what we need to understand of with how the brain works is, we have a population that 65% of them are visual learners.
Yes.
That's the majority of them, right? And so I'm like, here's the challenge. I want you to go buy something on Amazon right now, and we'll figure out whatever that is that they need recently. And I want you to keep track and take notes of your shopping experience, because I don't know about you, but we forget about that part all the time. And I'm like, give it to me now. You know what I mean? Like, I have 5 minutes, I have children, I have lunch break or whatever it is. I don't have all the time in the world. A confused shopper never buys. And I'm definitely one of those people who experience that. And so when you go shopping and listening, what is it that makes me feel good about buying from these people? And what is making me make the decision of adding it to cart? Not even just buying, but just adding it to cart. Yeah. What pisses me off when I'm trying to shop? And of course, the confusion part's there, shitty visuals, you know, part's there, not enough information's there. You know what I mean? And I'm just like, once you like step out of being a business owner and I force them to take this like little test, this test drive of being a shopper and noting and writing down your experience as you're doing it, it's like the light bulbs start going off. Like everyone should be doing this, to be quite frank.
Oh, absolutely. Like one of my one of my little bugbears was I had a coaching call the other day with a lady who, you know, had some VA, you know, write her listing for her. And, you know, and she's a native English speaker herself. And yet, obviously, somebody who is not a native English speaker had written this listing. And I said, what are you doing? If I was reading this, you know, some of this stuff just does not make sense. It's obviously written by somebody who does not speak English. Why would you pay somebody to do that when you actually speak English and would buy this product yourself? It just, you know, and again, and she was doing this because some supposed, you know, Lambo driving guru told her to outsource her business. It's nuts.
Yes. And what we don't like to do, we also try to find faster ways of getting around it, you know, cutting corners a little bit. And I'm totally guilty of that myself as well. Like, I'm like, I don't like writing. I'll just find someone. But then they write it, I'm like, this is shit.
Fix it. Yeah, absolutely. I've paid two different, you know, supposedly genius copywriters to write listings for me. And those listings did no better than the ones that I was able to do myself. So I've stopped outsourcing that part of the business.
Yeah. And that also brings it down to like my three-step process that I bring with people. Because when you create an SOP, a standard operating procedure that's used within the business, any person you hire, any person who's writing ads, blog posts, emails, any sort of content around the product that you're selling, they have all the pertinent information because you're literally detecting and correcting what's happening. You're figuring out what the customer journey is. You're finding out where they're shopping and where they're getting information. And what a lot of people don't do when it comes to doing their initial research is they might touch on all that because that is also part of setting up the whole listing and finding the product. So we know how to do that in a certain way, but then we get away from it once we start getting into the manufacturing stage. When the money starts kind of coming in, we just almost like seem to forget about it. Mm-hmm. Where it's like, you know, like sure you built your house, but now let's upgrade the house. You know what I mean? Like yeah. You don't have to live in a shanty for yeah. this much time when you have money coming in. You know what I mean? Like let's put some paint on the walls, you know, get mm-hmm. some curtains up or whatever it might be. You know, and so like just understanding like that one component is great. But so 65% of the population are visual learners. So we have to really dive into that because obviously the robots is one thing. And a lot of people spend too much time and energy in that space, in my personal opinion, where they're not optimizing listings for the shopper because that's where the money is. That's the fastest path to cash is really speaking to the customer. So, you know, diving into what are those visual components going to be and going into a storyboard outline of what that's going to look like. And so how do we do that? And so another fun thing that I love to get people to do is go look at like 1990s infomercials. They're a freaking hoot. They're hilarious, right? But if you look at them, they're like usually like 3 minute long segments to 60 seconds, really kind of depends. If you screenshot every single like frame or like major frame where they're moving through that whole infomercial, it's a funny product listing. It's beautiful. It's brilliant. You know what I mean? Like, it's just like, oh my gosh, like get inspired. Like if you think of OxyClean, you're like, this is what happens when you have stains. And then this is what happens if you use regular, you know,
the detergent. Before and the after and the comparison.
And we have 1 million sold and we're freaking amazing. And you're going to get this much and express shipping and da, da, da. Like that's exactly what we're talking about. Like that you want to hit an emotional chord. Like you can hit an emotional chord for someone, you know, buying a bloody screwdriver for crying out loud if you know what you're doing, or a paperclip, you can still do that. Find an emotional chord to sell. You just need to have someone's a little creative to help you figure out what that story is going to be. But you know, really at the end of the day, like that visual component, which is really tying into how the brain operates and how the brain works, because the eye and the brain can interpret a visual in 13 milliseconds. Yeah. And when we used to have an attention span of 15 minutes 10 years ago, and it's 7 seconds now, most were like, Ashley, 7 seconds is not enough time. I'm like, hello. Yes, it is. 13 milliseconds is all you need to interpret an image. And they're like,
How fast are people scrolling on their phones through that social media now? I mean, That's
a really great, I love actually that you said that because that's totally on point. And then, you know, the other component is that your brain can interpret a visual over text 60,000 times faster.
Yeah.
So if we kind of know just the bare minimum basics, the premise on how that works, then you're like, okay, so visuals are super important. Everyone knows visuals are important. Like it's not rocket science. Everyone talks about how important visuals are, but do people actually put the time, energy, and effort into it? No.
How many Amazon listings do you see with the factory photos on there that have been really badly photoshopped, right?
Yes, the old days of like having the stock image and putting their PNG of your product into like the table or whatever the person's hand. Those don't fly anymore.
One of my favorite was those, have you seen those bath boards, you know,
put across the bathtub. Do you put like
across
a book
the bathtub,
on it?
And they've got like the cheese board and the wine and the and there's like 1 million things on this thing. There's no way I would get in a bath with with my iPad, my phone, the cheese board, a cup of coffee, and a glass of wine all piled on this thing. So
that's hilarious. Yeah, exactly. They definitely have not done the customer journey or discovery by any stretch of the imagination. But yeah, so you like, once you kind of like dive in and dissecting where your people are, which I always highly recommend going into like blog posts, because blog posts aren't necessarily selling anything, even if they have like affiliate links within that particular blog post, but people are going to do their research 9 times out of 10 before they buy something. And the majority of people are actually going to YouTube, like 80% of YouTube videos are viewed for unboxing and, you know, why this product is so great before they actually go buy it. So depending on your targeted audience, your demographic.
I'm going to stop there. I'm going to stop there because that is such an important point that I actually hadn't thought of for years. I remember when I first launched my product, I had a lot of influencers doing stuff on YouTube. And one of those things, you know, you do it and then you forget about it. So I'm going to circle back to that and really make a recommendation for people who are starting or launching products or brands to get some YouTube content out. And it doesn't have to be their own and it doesn't have to be slick and fancy. Send it out to some influencers, and they don't have to be really big followings. It can be somebody that has, you know, 10 people view their video, but it's out there, right? And it's searchable.
Yeah. And you should have your own as well.
Yeah.
As well as.
But have as much YouTube content out there on your product as possible. Absolutely. And it's easy to find, absolutely. You know, that there's plenty of websites that you can find YouTube influencers, or you can find them yourself.
Yeah, Thomason.
Yeah, Thomason.
Yeah, there's a one that I have been
for a while, but Thomason was my preferred one for years.
Yeah, I think I was like I've been with them for since they basically started for the most part. I haven't used them in years.
Yeah,
but there's
too.
A million of them now. There's so
I know,
many.
There's so many. There's so many. But Thomason was I think the original one. But there's so many.
I have to agree with you. But yeah, so it's just like there's lots of ways of skinning the cat for sure. But you know, when it comes to the product listing, you really just have to take into the components of how your brain operates, how a person shops. And making sure that we do not confuse the shopper, because our job is to give them all the information they need in order to make an educated buying choice and disqualify competition.
And not too much to confuse them, right?
Exactly. And that brings us into like, how do you position your visuals to not confuse them, to give them the information that they need? Because we know that people don't read. 80% of people who land on anything, they scroll. All of it, and they don't read it. And so like I always like ask people, I like to test people with doing things, because when you do it yourself, it just becomes like real. Like go look for a recipe. And when you're looking at a recipe, how often are you scrolling and scrolling and scrolling? Where's the freaking ingredients? How long do I cook it for? What's the freaking temperature? But the ones that actually have a picture of like 2 eggs, 1 cup of water, and whatever it might be, you can get the information to get back to the kitchen really fast. And you feel good because you're not having to waste your damn time. And so like you have to take
you're talking about people who cook? Is that right? I've heard of this concept.
Skip the Dishes is like my best friend. I swear to God, I spend so much money with the food delivery service up here. It's crazy. I should definitely be getting paid for the amount of money I spend with them. But yeah, so you take that into consideration. And then, you know, with I have a drag and drop system to help sellers optimize their listing images really within 3 minutes, and it's productinfographic.com. And so we have 18 categories of preset templates where you can drag and drop your own product images into the different components. And with my three-step system, by the time you fill out the information in the three-step system, the very last page of that document will pop out the smallest bite-sized information bullet points that need to go into those images. It's already kind of like organized and correlated for you. So it's super easy. Beautiful. It's just step 1, 2, and 3. You know what I mean? Because no one has time for that crap for the most part. And everyone has pictures. They're just not sure what to do with them. And they may not be graphic designers.
Infographics is something you have to be so careful with, because, you know, you see them and they've got like 17 different things and here's this point. And yet, sometimes that the font is so small, you can't actually read what it is. Or if you're looking at it on your phone.
Too much text.
You know?
Yeah. Too much text as well is a really big thing. But what I really would love to make sure I push hard on for people, because again, I just love how the brain operates, is there's a lot of different languages that live in a lot of different countries around the world, no matter where you are living. But an apple is an apple, no matter what freaking language you speak.
Yep.
So use as much visual components to tell a story as best as possible. So if it's a dog thing, then have pictures of a dog. Use dog bones, paw prints, whatever it might be. If it has something to do with the sun or heat, have a logo, like have a symbol of the sun or like a heat flame or whatever it might be. And then what's left over, you use text for of trying to tell that story.
Yeah.
And you really have to make sure you're hitting the who, the what, the where, the how, the why, and the when with the call to action. And the very last one, which a lot of people don't do, which drives me nuts. I'm like, you hear about people and sales pages and sales funnels, and how many things have you gone through where you're reading something? It's like, click here now, join up now, and da, 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 or whatever it might be. Like, do you want to also have a slim body, or do you also want to have a good night's rest, or whatever it might be? Like, why is that not there? You know, and so going through that storyboard outline that you pre-set up with your research in advance, and then you can correlate your bullet points with your images at the same time for those who do end up reading.
Yep.
But really at the end of the day, it's our job to make sure, especially if you're selling on Amazon, because your website's a totally different component. But if you're on Amazon, our job is to make sure people don't scroll down.
Yeah.
If you're lucky enough that your hero image and a fraction of your title act that actually gets displayed, depending on if you're on a cell phone or whatever you're on, they click on it. This is when the job, this is like you make or break it once they're there. And the images are the first and the only thing that you're seeing if you're on your cell phone. And, you know, we have 150 million people using the damn app. So if you're not preparing yourself for 150 million users or the fraction of them they're going to be buying from you, then you're definitely missing some opportunity there. But we have to disqualify the competition.
Yeah.
All up front.
Because Amazon loves to put our competitors' products listings all over our own pages, right?
You don't care who you buy.
They don't care.
Spend your money.
But yep, they don't care which product they buy as long as they buy a product. But we care, right?
Exactly. Absolutely. And so, like, you know, that brings us back to like doing the competitive analysis, doing the research. Your competitors' negatives need to be shining as your positives, you know, understanding the customer journey, like their internal emotional attachment to what they're trying to get out of it. And I was having a conversation with someone. They're like, well, what about like, how do you decipher getting into the emotional component of someone who like with a weight loss product? And I'm like, okay, well, there's a lot of things that we can do, but let's just blanket statement here, how we can kind of pick this apart. Cause he's like, if someone's trying to like look good in a bathing suit, that's one thing. But what if someone, you know, has their old, you know, has kids and, you know, they don't really care about looking good in a bathing suit. Like, how do you decipher like what you talk about when it comes to a weight loss product? I'm like, well, there's multiple segments within a segment that you can kind of go for, and you can actually sell the same product to multiple
segments.
Two different segments. And so I'm like, well, if you're speaking to a younger individual who's using a weight loss product, they will care about looking good in a bathing suit. So you're, you know, of course you have to do your research. So I'm just blanket statementing here, but they will care what they look like about in a bathing suit. And so your messaging and your components should be healthy tied around that. I don't like using any negative storytelling or FOMO or making someone feel bad to do something. So like, let's take that off the table. And then the other component of someone who might be using a weight loss product, someone who says has children, that's an older individual, they want to stay around and alive for their children.
Yeah.
Yes, they want to look good. No, they will not be 20 again, but they want to feel good. They want to get their confidence back. But at the same time, they have a legacy. They have children that they have to look out for, and they want to stay alive for as long as possible. So those are two different stories of two different, you know, little segments within the same, you know, market, you know, and it just takes research. You have to find the customer journey and what their pain points are and what they're looking for. What verbiage are they using? And you can test a lot of this stuff using platforms like Usability Hub, where you can like put in websites, pictures, text,
Web pages, cell phones, anything.
And you can pay someone to give you feedback if you don't have a list or an audience to ask from, because your friends and family are only going to tell you nice things.
Of course. Yeah, no, don't ask your friends and family, especially if they're not in e-com, you know.
There's of course a lot more components behind all that you can kind of dive into, especially when it comes to the memory component, because that's super important. When you're talking about positioning yourself online, is we have three different sections within our brain where it can fire and wire memory. And even if two different sections forget a memory, if the third one still remembers it and gets sparked, it can actually fire and wire for the rest of them to get back up again. And so in order to be able to accomplish all that, you need to have a story, you need to have emotion, and you need to, like, now I'm like, my brain's not working right now. Story, information, or story, visual, and location. And so we can't control all those components per se, but we can control the location when they land on our listing. They can control the location when they land on our website, but we can't control the location of where they use the product. So hopefully it's a good experience when they use the product. But we all hear about storytelling. Every, you know, writer in the world, sales copy, whatever, they talk about telling a story. That's still very, very true. And then, of course, hitting an emotional chord. So if you can hit one or three of those things within how you're positioning yourself online between your listings on Amazon or your own website, you're going to be able to trigger that memory component, which is ridiculously important, because that's how you get organic word of mouth advertising, because people don't remember anything. You know, if you give someone a list of 20 words to remember, statistically, they'll remember about 5-6-ish, depending on the human being. But generally speaking, that's about it. But if you take those words and you put those words into a story format, they'll remember about 90% of the words that you do. So we're just like, okay, like, you know, you have to bring all these different components in there. And so if you go shopping at the grocery store, I don't know about you, but I don't know the names of anything that I buy. I know what the label looks like of the jar of spaghetti sauce or the bag of chips or whatever it is. I just look for the visual component of it because that's what it is. And that's also why we have to have consistency. So, you know, when someone understands the visual component and you're able to tell a story and you're able to make them feel good about the location that they're at when they meet you, and then hopefully you have a great job with the unboxing experience when they get the product at your home, where they're using the product, which is of course also a location trigger for the memory and the brain, then you're able to have them very clearly and very articulately able to tell their friends or family about the product they just purchased from you.
Yeah.
Without even thinking about it, because you did all the work by firing and wiring the brain.
Love it. Love it. Love it. Love it. Love it. Love it. Okay. I'm going to pivot a little bit now. Let's talk about something that you currently fascinating me with and pivoting a little bit. It seems like my Facebook timeline is full of people talking about crypto. And this is sort of like a very loaded word at the moment. And, you know, headlines and China this and Uruguay that. And, you know, one minute it's, you know, crypto billionaires and the next minute it's everything's plunging and all of that. So for those of you who came for the Amazon content, you might want to move on to the next podcast.
No, I can tell you, you want to listen to this part because there's some good little golden nuggets in here.
Exactly. Now, you know, I'll sort of put my hand up and say that I know very little about crypto. Over the last sort of 3 years, I've bought and sold a little bit, but I tend to have bought high and sold low. I'm very much a FOMO type of person, and you hear this, everybody's getting in, and especially a lot of my Amazon friends have been moving into the crypto space, and I keep seeing it, and it's like, oh, I've got to get me some of that, but I've got no idea what I'm doing. So talk to me a little bit about what's going on in the crypto space that you're aware of, that you can share.
Yeah. Well, you know, really at the end of the day, I'm a human like anybody else. I have to learn new things just like you're learning new things. And we all have to find a Sherpa, someone who can show us the ways. You know, we paid money to go to college, university for someone to educate us, inform us and help us with our journey.
So in the crypto spaces, that's sort of like these guys on YouTube that are sort of come up in the feed going, hey, buy this and we'll go to the moon.
By all means, it happens for e-com businesses. It happens for affiliate marketing. It happens for every bloody way of making money in the world. MLMs, you name it, that happens. And like anything else, you have to do your due diligence and you have to, you know, do your research, get some feedback, see what's going on to see if it warrants your time, your energy, and your attention. So that's obviously kind of like blanket statement number one. You know, full disclaimer, is like, go look at the people that you like it, compare, contrast, just like anything else that you've done in life. You're comparing, contrasting universities that you're going to go to, figure out what's the best program to go to and what's the best teacher that can teach the best thing. So there's no difference. You know, like I like to step back from the nitty gritty because I think people get too sucked down Alice in Wonderland's rabbit hole and like pointing fingers and getting upset. I'm just like, take a step back, man. It's all the same thing across the board if you really look at it from like a bird's eye point of view.
Yep.
But, you know, within the crypto space, it's scary because it's unknown to you. And anything that is, you know, unknown is of course scary.
Yep.
And, you know, as I said before, finding someone who has more knowledge than you, which is what we generally do anyways, to kind of help you understand or go down a specific pathway. But what I happen to love about learning anything new is I like to know rules and strategies on how to do things. So that means I don't have to know everything. I don't have to have a full-time job of learning something new. If I just have like, this is what I want to accomplish, this is what I want to do. I just want to know the A, B, C's and D's and kind of getting it done. And so with the crypto space, it's evolving. And no matter how we look at it, it's in our lives and you don't even know it. Like every time you use your Visa credit card, it's you being used. Hello. Do you need to know that information? Probably not. It's not really that big of a deal. But what's happening behind the scenes is that infrastructure and that landscape is being used, whether you're aware of it or not. So it's kind of like, maybe, you know, open up your eyes to it a little bit if it does interest you to kind of look into that space, because it's going to be put on you no matter what. So that's kind of like number one. And then, you know, number two, I have been blessed enough that my business partner, Dan Hollings, who I've worked with, you know, for 6 years and in the e-com space, he launched the book and the movie, The Secret, that $350 million campaign. And he was just like, you know what? I need a change from e-com. And so he ended up taking a step back a few years back while I continue to the e-com space and continue consulting, everything else like that. And the whole time he's like, Ashley, you got to see this. This is really cool. I found a new way of doing some stuff here. This is really awesome. I'm like, yeah, Dan. Okay, awesome. And he's like, Ashley, you know, what is what we're doing? I'm like, I'm working on Ashley right now. I'm working on Hidden Rules Expert. This is like, you know, I'm growing my brand. I'm super focused. You know, and he's just like, no, you have to see what we're doing. And sure enough, of course, you know, I love the guy. And so I came in and, you know, blew my goddamn mind. It's really what it is, because like anything else that he's ever done, he finds holes in the market. Mm-hmm. And so if I was going to do anything like I've done before, I pay to be next to the right people to Sherpa me all the way through it. And luckily enough, my business partner happens to be also be my mentor and my Sherpa in a lot of different ways. And so, you know, I got roped into, now we're going, we had so many people find out about his success. Now we're like, okay, let's put it out to the masses in that aspect. So what we've basically have been doing and what he has discovered is a less risky way, because any investment, of course, is risky, whether you buy a house or buy a business or whatever it might be. And I'm not an accountant, I'm not a lawyer, I'm not a tax person.
And we're not in any way giving any kind of advice here.
No advice
disclaimer here.
But what he was able to do is he was able to, again, e-com, find a robot that is able, or a system, software tool, whatever you want to call it, that it allows you to set up a parameter where you're able to make profit off of the coins moving up or moving down in value in the crypto space. Mm-hmm. So you sit there and people are like, that doesn't make sense, because everyone's been using day trading and regular trading tactics in the crypto space. Wait for it to go low, which means you're watching your screen, you're watching your, you know, hit the button, like refresh, and then buy. And then hopefully to God, you're picking the right time to sell. And, you know, like my husband does day trading, we have tons of money in the freaking market and it's down right now. So we're just in the waiting game and waiting for it to come back up, you know, praying and hoping and whatever. But the way that he does it, it's a set and forget system. You put in these parameters, and as the coin moves up and down, it's like a vending machine where you end up having like, you know, 25 cents, 50 cents, depending on how much money you're investing to begin with, that kind of pops out. And it's just rules that you follow with a specific strategy, which I absolutely love that, because the way that I work, I don't have time to learn every nitty gritty thing that's happening about some subject. I just need to know what I need to know in order to be able to execute and move down that road. So that's kind of like been the fun thing, is getting into, you know, the blockchain space and understanding it and, you know, building out these strategies and seeing proof of the returns that are happening. I have bots running and I have a 28% return right now on my investment. And I'm literally doing diddly squat. Like I might look at it once a week, if even.
Wow. Okay. I'm going to stop you there again. So you've got a 28% return on your investment over what period of time?
It's 45 days, I think is how long I have it. And technically I've actually, my coins have dropped outside of my grid, which means it's no longer trading. So I'm just waiting for them to kind of come back up again. You know, there's probably like a good week and a half worth of days where I'm not technically getting any sort of like, you know, vending machine coins coming out at me or whatever, but I don't give a crap, because it's either going to sit in my bank account or it's going to, I can put it somewhere else and try it. And of course, anything that you invest, you have to be willing to lose kind of scenario. So I started small, like most people. And as I get comfortable, you know, you work your way up, and which is what I've done. And what was really cool is I have a woman who's in my mastermind community, who's also following along, who's also, you know, joined us or whatever. And we were talking about other ways of looking at how we can leverage this particular strategy, or even just, you know, other investments sort of strategies. And she was talking about how, like, she just went to the bank and how hard it was for her to be able to tell the bank, like, this is why I need $35,000. I have an inventory thing coming. I have, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of sales. You know, this thing did $1 million last year. Like, I have all these things, but they wouldn't give her the damn money, because you know how it is, independent business owner and trying to prove it's just a pain in the bum. And then, you know, so she's just like, there's got to be something here. So we were talking about how we can kind of leverage that strategy. And like, okay, first and foremost, got to, you know, start small, get comfortable, then work your way up. But what about the idea of using or preparing yourself to leverage this strategy to incrementally increase your savings, if you want to call it that is technically for your inventory? Right. So if it's so hard to like get money from the banks and loans and taking money out of credit cards or whatnot, why not use your money to make money for you in a different way? So now, like, you know, I had a few conversations with some other e-com people and they're just like, ding, 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 ding. Like, holy crap, Ola. That's a really great idea. Why not figure out other ways of leveraging the money that we have in order to be able to buy more?
Look, I don't know what it is in Canada, but in Australia, if you've got a chunk of cash and you go take it to the bank, you're lucky if you're going to get, you know, 1.5-2% a year.
Exactly. Return.
Yeah. That's why most entrepreneurs put it into their businesses. And then if they've got some extra, then we're always looking for other ways to get the best return on our investment. And so, so Dan's.
That's also the confusing part too, right? Because a lot of people are like, how the hell are you? That's also the confusing part too. Yes. They're just like, how the hell are you getting such a big return on that? It's just like, well, in that particular space, there's no CEO running it. There's no people to pay out salaries to. So whoever invests, the funds come back to you. It doesn't pay for a CEO's second house in the Hamptons or something like that.
All the bank profits, like every year, like the banks are screwing us and then we see the profits and then what the CEOs of the banks make. And it's like, oh, hang on a second. How come you're only paying me, you know, 2% a year and yet, you know, you've got this multi-million dollar bonus package? Hello?
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, it's really interesting how e-com and that space are starting to correlate, especially now because, you know, as we dive deeper into it, you know, like we're on Facebook, we have our websites and who's your website hosted by? I'm with GoDaddy, right? All they got to do is push a button and my stuff is gone. The tens of thousands of dollars of building this site and the content and the copy and the funnels and all that stuff that I've built, blood, sweat, and tears to kind of, and I've done it again and again and again over the years as we, you know, grow and prosper in our career and in our lives. And, you know, in the blockchain space, in the other space, you know, people are now starting to realize you can have your own domain and no one can shut you off.
Yep.
You can technically buy, you know, your crypto or your digital land where you live. Like I can literally go on a site right now and buy the piece of property I'm sitting on right now in the virtual space, as well as owning it where I'm actually standing right now here in Vancouver, Canada. You know what I mean? So it's just like, boom. And there's so many freaking components. There's like people who are making these crazy freaking drawings that my children could do a better job on her iPad. Right?
I've told my daughter she's got to learn this NFT space.
Yeah, my daughters as well. Like they're all over it. So, you know, like all these components that we're talking about, these are the things that Dan is so excited to share with people because we don't have the time and the energy to do the research on our own. So he's done it all for us, generally speaking. Yep. And he's just bringing it to you and you can digest it as you see fit. And if it works for you, great. If it doesn't, that's great as well. But it's just another opportunity to see how the world is moving and changing. And I think because of what happened in 2020, everyone's really starting to understand, like it forced the world to reset. It forced the world to catch up. It forced companies to realize they don't need to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars on office space when they can technically have their peoples at home. And people don't need to have these flashy cars. They're working in order to pay for these cars to get them to work and from home again. You know what I mean? Like all these things. And like we're repositioning and reanalyzing how we're living life and how we're doing things. So I think that I like to look at the silver lining of absolutely everything bad that happens because I do feel that there always is one. You know, that whole year and a half stem to kind of where we are now, it's really propelled us in a way of new thinking, of new horizons, of new potential possibilities. And what seemed to be like a gag kind of scenario is now like, okay, this isn't, you know, conspiracy theory anymore. You know, if I just use that sort of like term to kind of explain how weird it is to people, like this is okay. Like this is now starting to become part of our lives. Like the biggest banks in the world are using it. You may not know about it, but the countries are using it. The countries are getting their own currency behind it. You know, so it's just like, that's the direction it's going. So you can put a blind eye to it, or you can at least open yourself up to it incrementally a little at a time. And that's the part that I think is the most exciting because it's here no matter what. So let's have some fun with it.
Yeah. Right? I have to say I'm super excited. I've been very quietly sort of playing around with Dan's training and so far really pleased. So
oh, I'm so happy to hear that. It's awesome. Yeah. I'm up late at night creating videos and training and documents and getting all the feedback from our students.
I love your videos. Okay. So if people want to find you to hang out in your world, how do they do that?
The easiest place is going to thehiddenrulesexpert.com. And you can find me everywhere else from that particular, you know, landing page site, as you could say.
So, and of course, as always in the show notes, I'll have links to all your stuff. And it's been a really fun conversation today. Thank you, Ashley.
Thanks for having me. I love it. I love the organicness of it. It was like here and there and talking like a normal conversation, like two girls sitting at the bar with a drink. I'm just like, thanks. I really appreciate it.
It's been lots of fun. And hopefully we'll get to meet each other in real life sometime soon.
It will happen. It will happen. Definitely. So thank you so much. And I just love what you're doing for the women in our space. I love how you are a leader. I love how you're showing up. And I love how you're pulling back the curtain and you're giving a voice to a lot of women in our space and men, of course. But, you know, just how much you're rah-rahing and you show up, it's inspiring. Oh, and I'm so grateful for doing that. So thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. We've got a little mutual love society happening here. Right back at you.
Thanks. Well, everyone has a fantastic day. Thanks for listening.
Bye.
So I hope you enjoyed today's episode and were able to pick up at least one nugget that you can put into action straight away. Please subscribe to and rate this podcast. And remember to check out the website womenonamazon.com to get all the information on today's guests, as well as links and discount codes to any products or services mentioned. And remember, don't wait for perfect. Get started now.